This is the November 12, 2011 interview of James Hurley by Ashley Bowden for the Cooperstown Graduate Program's Research and Fieldwork course, recorded at 5736 Highway 20, East Springfield, New York, 13333. Jim, I would like to thank you for your willingness to be interviewed. You should know that at any time you are able to stop the recording. And the primary purpose of this interview was to discuss your involvement with the rediscovery of Weeksville. However, I would like to start by getting a better understanding of your past. So from there, I would like to begin with the question, what were you doing before you became involved with Weeksville?
Let's see. You mean way back right then, that summer?
Well, that summer, kind of like, I'm interested in your relationship with the Central Brooklyn Neighborhood College and how you came to that that college.
Oh, they had started the Central Brooklyn Neighborhood College through Pratt Institute. The planning department of Pratt Institute was very heavily engaged in the community. And Ron Schiffman was the head of it, and he was very community-minded. And I'm not sure exactly how it... They started it, and they asked people if they had an idea of doing a course, non-credit course, for the community people, that they should volunteer, and I did. I had an idea of doing something about New York City, and I came up with a subject, exploring Bedford-Stuyvesant and New York City. And it was to be one day a week, I've forgotten how many weeks, going to different parts of New York City, with particular emphasis on Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights. So that was the, what year? I can't really remember, about 1967 or 68.
Okay.
We had about five people that signed up for it. A boy, about 12 years old, and three or four adults. And the ones who stayed through the whole thing were Dolores McCullough and Pat Johnson.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. What made you interested in exploring Brooklyn?
I guess I've always been curious about history and where people came from. And I had been in Pakistan before that. I've been in Pakistan from 1955 to 1960. And then I went to London to get an advanced degree in Middle Eastern history, including Pakistan and Islam especially. That didn't work out too well, so I came back to the country in 1964. And the movement, the Black History Movement, was just beginning then. Not Black History, but I forgot what they called it.
Civil
Rights Movement.
Okay.
And I wanted to do something. I wanted to stay in Brooklyn because there was sickness in my family. And they were in Brooklyn, and I wanted to stay for a while, a couple of years. So I went to Brooklyn Library history section, and the lady there was very nice, Louise Turpin, I think was her name, and she suggested I go to the Albany houses where they wanted somebody to work on with the tenant organization, which I did for a summer. And then came this opportunity to teach or lead this exploring thing. I had done in Pakistan, I had been a member of an expedition to the Himalayas and so exploring that culture, which was Tibetan-speaking area, little known, called Baltistan. So I already had some experience in exploring. In general, I was curious too, and I wanted to be a teacher.
Okay. So, how did you end up in Pakistan?
How did I end up? Well, after I went to Columbia and graduated in 1952, and then I went into the federal government, and from the Commerce Department, I was assigned to Pakistan, to Lahore, Pakistan, to the Consulate General. I switched over to the State Department and got a 2-year assignment to Lahore, where I stayed actually 2 terms, almost 5 years. Came back in 1955.
Okay. You said from Pakistan you went to London?
To London. I stayed there from 55 or 56 to 60. And then I came back. I stayed in Pakistan 55 to 60, and then in London 60 to 64.
Okay.
And then I came back.
Okay. And where did you study in London?
I was studying I wanted to study South Asian history with an emphasis on the Islamic part of it, which was Pakistan. And but the man who was teaching South Asian history that year was away, so I ended up in the Middle Eastern section,
okay,
which turned out to be unsatisfactory. So I stayed there 4 years. The last year or so, one of the professors suggested I try and write a book on an explorer, a man named Oral Stein, who'd been a principal explorer of the Silk Road in China.
Okay.
At the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century.
Okay.
So I still maintain that interest, and I have 250 books almost on his life and works in that room.
And I understand that those works, is that a part of the book collection that you're now selling online? Or
I have a collection of 2,000 books on Kashmir, 1900.
Okay.
And 225 on Stein, who used to write his books in Kashmir on a high meadow in the summers, and wrote a number of books on Kashmir. So he was very closely associated, and I put the two collections together and am trying to get them into some university library.
Okay. So what did you do as a part of this workshop that you were hosting at the Brooklyn Neighborhood College?
Well, I didn't do much except lead the tours. We didn't have, I don't think there was much in the way of classroom. Wherever we met, I guess maybe I would tell a little bit about where we were going. We went to like one tour was to Spanish Harlem. Of course, there were a couple of tours in Brooklyn, and there was one to the Verrazano Bridge area, in the Narrows, and we went to the Metropolitan Museum to see the Black History exhibit they had then, and several other areas I can't remember right now.
Okay.
But I think it was maybe 8 or 9 different 3-hour tours.
Okay. Okay. And so tell me about your relationship with Weeksville as it relates to that class.
Well, at some point in that class, the name Weeksville came up, and I still don't know whether Pat Johnson, who was a wonderful researcher, or me found it. Possibly I did, because I got them interested in it, but I couldn't swear that it wasn't Pat. There was a book called Brooklyn's Eastern District by a man named Eugene Armbruster, who was a cigar manufacturer in Brooklyn in the 20s and 30s, and he wrote a book. He was a local history buff, and he wrote a book on Brooklyn's Eastern District, which it comprises, it was an old term that was applied to Williamsburg and even central Brooklyn, now called Bedford-Stuyvesant. And it was there that there was this mention of the, I think they used Negro, the Negro districts of Weeksville and Carville. And it described them in pretty good detail, and it talked about the various institutions that were there. The African Methodist Church, there was a Baptist Church, which is still there, the school, Colored School Number 2, which is now, I think 342 is present reincarnation of that early mid-19th century school called Colored School Number 2. And the Citizens Union Cemetery, I can't remember. Oh, the Abyssinian, the African Civilization Society.
Okay.
That was there was a national organization formed after the Civil War, and it had an office, or its central office was in Weeksville, where the Transit Authority yard is now.
Okay. Okay. So, what happened next after coming across the term Weeksville in Armbruster's text? What happened?
Well, Pat was she had a natural inclination for research. And Dolores was the activist. She was, I wouldn't say she had a big mouth, but she might say that. But she was the one that knew everybody. She was a stenographer to the Supreme Court in Brooklyn. And she knew all the politicos and even people in City Hall in Manhattan. And she was our point woman to contact important people. But Pat was the one who had a natural inclination to research things. I don't know if she had a college degree or not, but I was so delighted. She used to go to the what was then called the Long Island Historical Society on her lunch hour to research what we were interested in, these institutions that we'd found associated with Weeksville. And it was so inspiring to me to have, like a student. I was like the teacher. She was like a talented student, and it was a very great thrill to have such a person who would spend a lot of time from her job. She worked for the rent administration city, I think, and her office was close to the Historical Society.
Okay.
So she started researching, and then one night there was an article in the New York Times about Model Cities Project starting on the block bounded by Troy, Dean, Bergen, and Albany Avenue.
Okay.
And that was the center of which, that was where the church had been, was still. The Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church, which dated way back to the time of Weeksville. And so in the night, it came to me that night of the newspaper came out, and I read that article, but it didn't gel in my head till the middle of the night, as I remember it. And I got up and I sent a telegram to the Model Cities office, saying this is the center of a 19th century black community named Weeksville, and you should look at it and sponsor research and photograph everything that might be a remnant of that community on that block. And that's where they built eventually the Weeksville houses. Mm-hmm. That's how that happened. Dolores got in at that point and started making calls to make sure they answered. Mm-hmm. And eventually they awarded us $500 to do all that work of photographing and so forth. And that's how it started, though we didn't get the $500 for years. but in the after that, I guess I got a job with the Bedford-Stuyvesant anti-poverty group, Youth in Action it was called. Youth in Action. And within Youth in Action, they allowed me to focus on researching and doing whatever was necessary, taking pictures and so forth.
Okay. How did you all know the boundaries of the Weeksville
community? Well, we didn't really know boundaries. We just could conclude from the Armbruster article.
Okay.
Or what was in those pages. It's not very, it's like maybe a half a page at the most of information. But it has all those institutions and a little background information, not much. But it was enough to get a good start. I mean, it had names and didn't have dates. But it had good, solid information from we could start researching each one of those institutions. Mm-hmm. What else did you ask?
That was the only question. Oh. How did you know the boundaries?
The boundary?
Yeah.
Well, we knew the Citizens Union Cemetery. Either Pat or I had found maps at the Long Island Historical Society from that period, from the 1850s, 60s, 70s. It showed these institutions, most of them, were on maps. And Citizens Union Cemetery was quite a ways, actually. It was to the south, on the other side of what is now Eastern Parkway. So that was not, we didn't think that was a boundary of Weeksville. All I guess we ever concluded was that Weeksville was a couple of blocks, present-day blocks, because there were no streets laid out in when Weeksville was started in the 1830s or 40s. The grid had not been constructed for the present layout of streets. So we never established definite boundaries, just had an idea that it was within these institutions. It looked like it was a few blocks, present-day blocks, around the initial area that Model Cities was going to. They seemed to have picked a block. I think it was block 1340, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
But that was where the project was built, Weeksville Houses. And that seemed to have been more or less in the center of where the little community of Weeksville grew up.
Okay. Okay. So you said that people began doing the research after being allocated the $500 that the group didn't receive until later.
Right.
What happened now that the site was rediscovered and you said there was research that was conducted. What happened, or what type of research?
Well, Dolores did some research, but she was basically our mouthpiece.
Okay.
she was the one who knew everybody, and Judge O.D. Williams, who was one of the first black judges on the Supreme Court in Brooklyn. We found out that he had lived on that block, the key block, as a kid. And so we went to see him. I'm not sure of all the actual timing of all these,
okay.
how we got to meet this one and that one. But at some point, the newspapers took an interest. We, of course, were looking for ways to find funding. And Dolores, I can't remember which newspaper wrote the first article. It may have been the Daily News. And probably Dolores suggested it or made the contact. And from there, all the other newspapers, including the Communist Daily Worker, and the New York Times, they came on, I think, after the flight, when they heard that a black pilot had brought up a white guy looking for an old black settlement. They thought that was pretty neat.
Okay.
So they wrote a big article about it, and that drew people in. You know, people got interested in. And through Dolores and maybe Elsie Richardson, who was a local grassroots person, we started to broaden. And I can't remember who identified it. Wilson Williams was a scoutmaster of Troop 2. I can't remember the exact number, but okay. It was the scout troop headquartered in the Albany Houses, which is right there next to this block.
Okay.
And so Wilson got his Boy Scouts involved, and when we were allowed permission to be on the block, while construction, destruction.
Okay.
They were demolishing all the houses on the block. And we photographed all of them before they were demolished.
Okay.
So the 5,000 or so slides I recently gave to Weeksville, have pictures of that process. And I took a lot of slides. I'd been a photographer in the Navy.
Yes.
And in college and in high school, I did photography. So I covered this very thoroughly, you know, 5,000 slides over several years. Mm-hmm. And some black and white slides as well. Not slides, photographs.
Okay.
And there, a team from Weeksville came up with Jennifer Scott, the research director, about 2 months ago, and they went through all the stuff I had, and they took the slides they took, and they're coming back to do the other parts of it, and I'm looking for all my books that we used in those days, and I've just written, on the computer, I sent them a list of the first 65 books.
Okay.
Or pamphlets or articles that we used. So I'm giving them to them. So where are we now?
I do have a follow-up question. So you mentioned the flight, the plane ride.
Oh, the great plane ride.
Yes, how did that come about?
Well, Joe Haynes was an engineer in the Transit Authority. He eventually was an accident investigator for the federal, whatever it is, that federal group that investigates airplane and train crashes.
Okay.
He was one of their investigators, but his basic job was as an engineer in the one of the shops of the Transit Authority. He was a pilot, and he eventually, I think, in that recent biography we found of him, that he was president of the African American Pilots Association, eventually. And he taught young people the elements of aviation and, I guess, even flying. So Joe, I met Joe by accident at the Brooklyn Children's Museum, which was then called Muse because it was in temporary quarters.
Okay.
While they built a new museum. And I did a tour, architecturally oriented and history, tour of, we called it Bed-Stuy, some people call it Crown Heights, part of the northern part of Crown Heights, north of Eastern Parkway, between Eastern Parkway and Fulton Street, from about Bedford Avenue to Albany Avenue. And I did a tour for the Parkway-Stuyvesant Community and Housing Council, which was my community group in that area where I lived. I lived at 959 Park Place. I had moved into the community from my parents' house in Flatbush. So I was there between Brooklyn and New York Avenue on Park Place. And I did the tour for them, and then for the Museum of the City of New York. I expanded it to there. I got the director. Ray Thompson was black, and he was the co-leader of those Museum of the City of New York tours, along with Henry Hope Reed, a famous architect, architectural historian. So they commissioned me. I think they paid me $50 or something like that, to write the history of the area for the guides of the museum tours on Sundays. Henry Reed started them, I think, not many years before that. And so they eventually they did it twice.